Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
As long as I continue to make everything look pretty and shiny on the outside, I didn't care how miserable and ugly I felt on the inside. I realized that I deserved a better me, so I can be the wife and the mom that I really wanted to be.
If you're ready to get real about addiction treatment, call Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
What's welcome. Cool? What's up, Javier?
Welcome, 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 welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Hour. How are you doing?
You're talking to me? I'm doing amazing. I'm doing amazing. This is going to be my first, hopefully not the last time, I'm filling in on the Cannabis Hour for Patrick and or Elliot. So Javier, I'm super excited, man, to be here with you today. We got a great hour prepared. We've got Nicole Wolf, who will be joining us in a couple of minutes here. She's the brand director of the Flower Corporation, trades in the U.S. under the ticker FLWPF. We've got Louis Marchand at from CEO of Flora Growth. That'll be a little bit later on in the hour. We got guests. We got headlines. But Javier, before we get to all of that, how's your day going, man?
It's going great. It's going great. I was just I always catch different details of the intro of the show. Today, I was thinking about Mara Gordon saying, "I experienced the benefits of cannabis firsthand," which I like. And you know, it's so drop a comment in the chat if you have experienced the benefits of cannabis firsthand and what have they been. And also, I was seeing, you know, one of our first shows, actually your first show was on Zoom, not even in this platform, which I was crazy. Sorry, you go ahead.
No, I caught the part about a lot of people being in favor of legalization. I was like, yeah, hello over here. I'm in favor of legalization. So anyway, we got a great show today. Let's start, as always, though, with some headlines. That's also the great thing about this industry, right? Is that every day, literally every day, you cannot go a day without more headlines. And today is, of course, no different. So let me just start off here and bring up the chart of Columbia Care, ticker CCHWF here in the U.S., making an acquisition today. They are acquiring Medicine Man Denver for $42 million in cash and stock. The move comes a couple of months. Remember, they had Medicine Man had a deal that was terminated with it's Swayze, right?
Yeah.
Javier, right? Or Swayze?
We never know.
We never know. Okay. So they had a deal with Swayze / Swayze that was terminated. And so the deal today, Columbia Care is buying Medicine Man $42 million. It's $8.4 million in cash and $33 million in stock. There you see the chart of Columbia Care up on the screen. Javi, it seems like the M&A wheels are super greased right now.
Super greased up. And this is interesting, right? This is an interesting acquisition. Medicine Man Denver was once the same company or you know, created by the same people as Schwazze, which used to be called Medicine Man Technologies.
Right.
Medicine Man Denver is one of the oldest dispensary chains in the U.S. And Andy, the creator, and his brother started it actually from their basement. At first, it was not a gray area. You know, they were caretakers, and they've developed a multi-million-dollar business, as you can see now, being acquired by one of the largest U.S. cannabis operators for more than $40 million and a decent amount of it in cash, which always, you know, shows there's real value to the companies being acquired, and also, of course, the fact that there is $33.6 million in stock proves the value and future of Columbia Care stock. Not a recommendation, but just an observation here in relation to.
It also speaks to the fact that, you know, we've been saying, the people have been saying this for years, right, that there was going to be consolidation, and events like, for example, a global pandemic tend to trigger seismic changes, right, in the layout and the structure of a given industry, and kind of makes no difference. So, and it does seem like in the past, what would you want to say, 6 months, maybe a little more, the M&A has gotten hot, right? We had the Tilray Kronos thing. We had Jazz and GW Pharma. There's been a handful of big deals and a number of smaller ones, and it seems picking up.
Trulieve acquiring MX Life Sciences. Merging with Harvest, as you mentioned, Tilray and Aphria. Just massive deals, and a lot more to come, right?
Yeah, I think I said Tilray Kronos. I don't know why I said that. Tilray Aphria. And now today, Columbia Care and Minuteman Denver. Okay,
we will be discussing, though. We will be having a Kern on our next show discussing their acquisition of Viridium Data. So, I mean, all happens for a reason. There you go. Right.
What other headlines do we have today, Javi?
Quick shout out to Baybuds on the comment section saying THC helps me with anger management and insomnia. Nate Miller says the benefits of cannabis helps me buy a stock low and sell them as high as I can.
That's great. That's great, Nate. I'm so happy for you.
you got the pun there, right? Sell as high as I can.
Oh. Yes, I got it, Javi. I got it.
There you go. Right. Back to news. Yes. In Connecticut, great news. Marijuana legalization. There's a bill sent to Governor Lamont's desk after days of fierce debate. So now Connecticut is on the verge of becoming the 18th state to legalize marijuana for recreational or adult use purposes in the United States. Usually, you know, before in the past, government, you know, Governor Lamont was opposed and threatened to veto over an 11th hour amendment, but he is now expected to legalize and sign the bill that would allow possession up to 1.5 ounces of cannabis by adults of 21 and over as of July 1st. Cool stuff. Sales expected to commence in 2022. For stock plays, keep an eye out on companies operating in the Northeast, especially in the New York and New Jersey markets. I'm sure they will be jumping into this market pretty soon.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, right? We've got New Jersey making moves, we've got New York making moves, and Connecticut, tri-state area, baby, tri-state area represent. I'm excited as a tri-state area native. This is very exciting news.
Where are you from? Tell our viewers.
New Jersey, come on, dirty Jersey, the armpit of America, represent.
Come on, why? So here's some interesting operators, companies operating in Jersey. Air Wellness, AYRWF, TerraSet, TRSSF, Verano Holdings. You can also see companies with operations in New York and not in Jersey, like Cresco Labs, which is CRLBF.
That's mostly in Illinois, I thought.
Which one? Cresco?
Cresco.
Oh, yeah, but they're in all the states, and they're a strong player in New York.
Okay, great. That's cool stuff. As someone who's long Cresco? Like to see it. All right. I don't want to wait too long before we bring on our guests. Let's do just like one more headline for the moment. If we can, Javier, and then if we have time, we will come back to headlines after we're done with our first guest. But let's talk about we got so many headlines here. I don't even know which one to we should talk about Weed Maps. Duh.
Yep.
Let's talk about Weed Maps, the IPO. Yesterday,
MAPS on the NASDAQ. What do you think? Can we bring up the chart?
I'm bringing it up
in Zynga Pro.
I'm bringing it up right now. Oh, that's a two. There's a 15-minute chart. Okay, the Weed Maps IPO. It happened. WM Holding Company is the actual name of the company, but Weed Maps is the name we all. That is the brand we all know it by. And the IPO was yesterday, so you can see there, and I'm going to show you in the newsfeed in Benzinga Pro when I pull up the ticker. You can actually see how this thing got to market yesterday. Not cooperating. Let me go back to the chart. Okay. Anyway, Weedmaps public debut yesterday on the NASDAQ, the latest IPO in the cannabis space. Javier, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, you want to find it. The news before that was indexed under Silver Spike, SSPK. This was a SPAC transaction, right? So right. Until yesterday, the ticker was SSPK. That's why it's not showing up on the Bitzinga Pro feed. But if you do check, it's there. We have a bunch of information, but we do want to see how the stock behaved following its public debut. What are you seeing on the chart?
This has to be one of the most well-known cannabis brands, cannabis ancillary brands in the country. I think a lot of people know Weedmaps. They have very good SEO. The first 2 days are very encouraging of the conversion. We've seen a lot of these SPACs. These conversions have been sell the news events where they'll pop on news of the announcement and drop on the actual conversion. That has not been the case, really. We are trading higher in the last couple of days. So that's an encouraging start. I fear a lot of these SPACs are stuck trading together regardless of the underlying business and the underlying company and the industry that they're in. They all, you know, SPACs go up, they all go up. SPACs go down, they all go down. Yeah. They're all kind of lumped in together for better or for worse. But first 2 days are encouraging for Weedmaps. So no position, but first 2 days are encouraging.
Yeah, no position. Brief disclosure. We are bullish on Maps, but do notice Weedmaps is a content partner of Bitzinga Cannabis. Unrelated, but thought it's an important disclosure here just in case there's any conflicts of interest. You never know. You know, the reasons for being bullish on a partner, obviously, you know, there's always some kind of extra incentive and, you know, wanting your partners to succeed. We are at Bitzinga. We're firm believers of the philosophy of the rising tide lifting all boats. So that's what we're here for. $650 million valuation or market capitalization for the first, you know, big publicly traded cannabis publication out there. So not bad.
Let's go to our guest, shall we? I think we shall.
Let's do it.
Time flies when you're having fun. It's 4:12. Let's bring on Nicole Wolf. She's the brand director of the Flower Corporation. Again, trades under the ticker FLWPF here in the U.S. Nicole, welcome to Cannabis House.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's bring some much-needed calmness, I think, to the show. Javi and I'm a little wound up because I'm not normally allowed to be here. I'm not usually. They don't let me on this show, but today they were like, "Oh, Spencer, we need you to fill in," and I'm just super hyper to be here. Apologies if I'm going a million miles a minute, but let's just start. Tell us about Flower. Tell us about the company.
Sure. Yeah. So Flower Corporation is a licensed producer. We're based out of Kelowna, BC. And out there, we have a purpose-built indoor facility. It features 20 small grow rooms. Alongside that on our Kelowna campus, we also have the first ever cannabis-dedicated research and development facility. And that was brought to life through a partnership with Hawthorne. For Flower, we are really dedicated to cultivating premium cannabis here in Canada. So everything from the facility to our processes, it's all set up to ensure that we are delivering premium cannabis to the consumers. And mm-hmm. we are small, so it's very intentional. It's integral, we believe, to our philosophy of delivering on premium. And then Flower, which is the brand that I represent, is our recreational cannabis brand under the Flower Corporation.
So you mentioned Hawthorne. This is Hawthorne Gardening, the division of Scotts Miracle.
Yes.
Okay. Just for reviewers, Nicole is talking about the side of the business dedicated to cannabis at Scotts Miracle Grow. That's New York Stock Exchange, SMG. Also, interesting proxy play in case you're bullish on Flower. As we were just saying, you can also be bullish on its partners.
I want to follow up. So, Nicole, you're the brand director, and we know that cannabis, CPG, consumer packaged good, for better or worse, at least in the U.S., maybe not so much in Canada, but the market is so divided, bifurcated. How do you market a cannabis brand to like stand out? Because like, when I go to the dispensary, it's like it's like so much, it's overload, right? There's like so many brands. How do you market a cannabis brand right now?
Yeah, it's really challenging, but I find that's almost the exciting part. So I came previously, I worked at Molson Coors. So very familiar with the regulated space and marketing in regulated industries. And when I made the move over to cannabis, one of the things that I found was day one of legalization, we had hundreds of brands, and that number has only ever increased. And when you, because of the regulations as well, when you walk into a store, there's a lot of sea of same. So it has been rather challenging, but I think that's also the exciting part. I think the key to me and the key, I believe, to building brands in cannabis and in any space for that matter is being authentic and being authentic to who you are as a brand, being authentic to your consumers. And I find that particularly within cannabis, there's cannabis didn't just come to market the day that it was legalized. It's something that's been around for a very long time. And I think sometimes people forget that. And to me, it's about looking at the culture and making sure that you're ingrained in the culture, because your consumers are going to call you out if you aren't building authentic brands and if you're not building something that stands for them. So I think that's kind of the key philosophy. And that's something that I always have in the back of my mind.
And I mean, you just let me into my next question, actually. So how does your archetypical consumer look like, right? Like, who are you marketing to?
Yeah, so we identified our consumer in a little bit different way at Flower. So rather than going down the typical demographic route, looking at ages and so on, we actually designed our consumer for a mindset. And we call our mindset the balanced achiever. So what that looks like to us is people who are using cannabis on a regular basis, they're heavy consumers. But the real key is that they're using cannabis as a tool and not a distraction. And I think that plays into one of the big things that we believe as a brand is around reducing the stigma that still exists around cannabis. So cannabis really can be beneficial to a lot of people in different ways. And I think that kind of key differentiator of using it as a potential tool is something that's really important and kind of how we designed our key consumer. And again, with being a premium cannabis brand, we are more expensive. So we are catering to that kind of heavy user, someone who's looking for quality, someone who knows a little bit about cannabis.
First question I'm going to ask follow up with is how someone in the chat's asking where they can get that painting.
That painting, that is a lovely hotel painting. I'm actually traveling for work right now, so
that means that you can probably get it somewhere. It's not like hotels are known for having unique paintings in the room.
It means you can just take it off the wall and bring it away.
Yeah, maybe I'll walk it outside down the street.
Okay. It's priced in. You know, they expect you to take the soap and one painting. And I heard I heard from friends also light bulbs, but you know, don't tell hotels.
Not my personal style, but we'll go with it. It worked for the vibe.
Don't take light bulbs, please, people. Nicole, if I can follow up on that. Okay, so marketing strategy. Can you tell us like what goes into that? What are your, we talked about who your target consumer is, but like as far as the actual strategy itself, like what goes into that, especially when you like enter like a newer market.
Yeah, I think one of the things, so I've been with Flower for coming up on 2 years now. And one of the things that really drew me to Flower was the facility, the team, and the product. The one thing that was really clear through every meeting that I had in the early days was that Flower wanted to play in and was very committed to producing premium cannabis for the Canadian recreational market. And the opportunity I saw was to really build a brand around these beliefs. The foundation of the brand existed in people's minds, but not necessarily yet in the brand expression. And that's what I was really excited to do. And I think entering kind of a newly legalized market is really exciting. I think this idea of having a blank page to play with, and to my point earlier, also recognizing that while it's newly legalized, it is by no means new. So there were so many people to learn from. And And my early days at Flower was really about having conversations with some of the founders who have roots in the legacy market, and really kind of getting into their mind space of what they believe the product to be, what they believe the brand to be, and then kind of taking my knowledge and history of building brands and being able to express that in a way that appeals to our consumer. So designing a logo based in beliefs and a foundation and bringing a visual identity that's unique, but also can tie back to the brand and really stand out.
So you mentioned you came from Molson Coors. Aside from the obvious differences, right? Like, how is marketing cannabis different than marketing beer or alcohol? Aside from, you know, the legal differences and that sort of thing. Are there unique challenges that you didn't see coming?
Well, I think I have to speak to the obvious one, okay. And that is I thought I knew a regulated product in beer, and then I came to cannabis, and wow, this is regulated. It is very regulated. So that was obviously a huge challenge. And I think building brands, you have a similar recipe for kind of any brand, any industry. And I think that the biggest differentiator, again, with cannabis and what is the most important thing to me is making sure that it is authentic. So it's identifying your consumer, building a brand for that consumer, but knowing that they're going to call you out if you're not authentic. There is such an incredible culture that exists within cannabis. There are so many people who have been trailblazers for years. And I think to me, that's the biggest difference. And that's the biggest thing that I wake up in the morning and think of. And when we're building our strategy for the next year, or we're creating a campaign, or we're executing a campaign, or even something as straightforward as a post on our Instagram page, is it takes a lot of consideration to say, is this authentic, not only to Flower, but to the industry, and what is the reaction going to be?
Mitch in the chat is saying he loves the BC Pink Kush. I am the managing director for Benzinga Cannabis, and I know a lot about cannabis in general. I am not a connoisseur of strains. I have my favorites, and that's about it. Indulged in some Jack Herer recently. But what's Pink Kush? That was not my question, just like a footnote. But, you know, what's BC Pink Kush?
BC Pink Kush, that I would say is our signature strain. That is a personal favorite of mine, as long as I am going to bed immediately after, because personally it does kind of send me there. But it's one that's very near and dear to my heart. So one, it was the winner of Kind Magazine, had awards last year, which were voted on by budtenders, and our BC Pink Kush took home Indica of the Year. So that was obviously a really exciting and proud moment for us to have our product being recognized by budtenders, which are obviously such a key component of the industry. And BC Pink Kush was also the hero strain in our inaugural brand campaign, which was Art and Science, which we launched last summer, which ended up being the recipient of a Clio Award, which was really exciting. So I think for those reasons and the fact that the product itself is so great, happy to hear that people are consumers and enjoying it. I'll pass that along to our team in Kelowna.
I mean, and look at that. And that is, you know, it ties perfectly ties into what I was going to ask. Actually, my question related to Clio Awards. For viewers who are not aware, Clio Awards is probably the most, or one of the most prestigious award shows in advertising, design, communication, mostly marketing and advertising, I'd say. A few years ago, they started doing Clio Cannabis and have recognized the coolest brands, in my opinion. And you can see that, like, design is off the charts. It's crazy. It's beautiful. It's nothing like you've ever, you know, you would have ever imagined cannabis would look like 10 years ago, you know, but it does. So can you tell me a little bit about what went into that, you know, what went into the campaign and you know, why you think you won?
Yeah, I think, like I said, that was a really big moment for the brand, and being recognized for that was obviously really exciting. And when I think back to kind of how the campaign was developed, I look back to 2020, and I don't think it's a year that any of us expected. With COVID-19, pivot was really the name of the game when it came to plans. I think I use that iconic Ross from Friends pivot meme in just about every deck I presented last year. But we were actually relaunching Flower and its new visual identity in March, right as COVID hit. And we had a plan to do this really big emotional brand launch. And we had to take a step back and say, this isn't going to work based on kind of where the world is and where Canada is at this time. And when you think back to the shutdowns, consumers no longer necessarily had this opportunity to go into store, interact with bud tenders. So we took that pause as a way to shift from kind of being just brand focused to a little bit more product focused. And that was where our BC Pink Kush Art and Science campaign came in. And the insight kind of around that was everyone's talking about premium cannabis. Everyone has high quality, but no one's really defining what that means. You hear premium everywhere.
I just remove it. Every time I get a pitch or whatever, I just go like, okay, like whatever I'm reporting on is like, yo, okay, premium, buy. Unless I know for a fact it's premium, like personally, no, I'll just remove it. Just like, yeah, no first of its kind, no premium, no highest quality, you know, no organic, definitely not organic. Oh, I mean, you do have something like that in Canada, Whistler. We can talk about it later, but sorry, go ahead.
No, it is. And I started off by saying Flower is a premium cannabis company. And so we do that as well. But it's to me, it's about defining what does premium mean for our consumer, or what does premium mean to us? And we took a moment to talk about this idea of precision cannabis and consistency. So last year, it's gotten a lot better, but you could go on a product on a retail website and the THC range was 10, 12, 15%. So I don't know about you guys, but if I'm smoking something that's 15% THC or 25% THC, my experience is going to be completely different. And at the time, Flower's BC Pink Kush was one of the, if not the tightest range on the market. So our THC range was plus or minus 2.5% for what we were selling. So we started to redefine this idea of quality around consistency. And that's really where Art and Science mm-hmm. was built. And it was exciting because the creative that came from it was unlike anything else you saw in the market. It really did push boundaries creatively while remaining firmly within the regulations that are set out in the Cannabis Act. And it was so different, but also so relevant. And to be recognized by Clio's and winning that award, I know while awards aren't everything, what it does is a really great indicator that the brand and the team and the product is doing something right. And that makes me really excited about the future.
Spencer, you're
I was on mute. I'm sorry. I muted myself and then I forgot to unmute. Nicole, what trends are in terms of marketing, specifically marketing cannabis, are you looking forward to moving away from as the industry matures?
I think one of the trends I'm looking forward to moving away from would be this conversation on THC. Like, it is the way the consumer is shopping right now, THC and price. But I'm looking forward to the consumers maturing, us as brands maturing, the industry maturing, to be able to really differentiate ourselves as brands versus just these metrics that people are reading on labels. So I think that's a big one. And if we have any opportunity to kind of lead that conversation, it's something that I'm really excited about trying to do and figuring out a way to do that. I think the other really interesting thing is this idea of collaboration. Again, cannabis is so different than anything I've worked in before, where yes, there is obviously competition, but the industry is really about elevating each other. And you see some really cool collaborations coming in through that. So I think that's another thing that's really, really interesting. Obviously, I would love to see the regulations loosen, but I'm not holding my breath on that one. So for now, I think this idea of having constraints to really inspire creativity is something that we're going to continue to do.
And in terms of Flower Corporation specifically, what is the next big catalyst that we should be looking for?
In terms of Flower Corporation specifically, I think for us, it's just continuing to dial in our processes to make sure that we are delivering that high quality cannabis that the consumer is looking for. I think it's about kind of expanding our portfolio as well in terms of strains. And then continuing to build a brand that people recognize and also can identify with. I think as a marketer, particularly in a space where it's not a need to have, it's a want to have, having someone go into a store and pick up the cobalt blue glass jar of flower is something really, really exciting and empowering, and what I hope that we'll continue to do.
I think I'm playing the ad right now. Is that the ad?
Yeah, we got it. I was going crazy.
Okay, there it is. This is what Nicole was referring to, right? Yes, yeah. There it is. BC Pink. There it is.
Yes.
All right. Nicole Wolf is the brand director for the Flower Corporation. Trades under the ticker, in the U.S. at least, of FLWPF. Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today on The Cannabis Hour.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
That was some good stuff, Javi.
Yeah, man. Super interesting. Very guys, different.
If you like that, you know what to do. You smash the like. That's what you do.
Like, subscribe and stuff. You know, and stuff.
And stuff. That's exactly right. And stuff.
Yeah, we're journalists. We're proud to be very accurate with the use of language here. Stuff. Who's back there? Is it Henry? What am I seeing?
You know what? I think Aaron Bree is enjoying too much of the flower product, I think, is what he's doing over there.
If you too have been enjoying, you know, cannabis a little bit too much and just forgot to get your dad a Father's Day gift, you can go to Benzinga.com/cannabis and find our last minute cannabis friendly gift guide.
Hold on. Oh, wait. I'm in this group. So hold on a second. Let me just bring it up on the screen so I can see what we're talking about. Cause I'm in this group. All right, here we go. Benzinga.com/cannabis. I'm there. Now what? Javi.
Yeah. You got to scroll down.
Yeah. Okay.
A little bit more.
Scrolling.
Here you go. You see it there? You went past it in the list there. Up.
Okay.
There. Down. There. Right next to earnings.
Dude, I'm looking there. I found it. Jeez.
Boom.
Okay, I'm going. All right, help me out here. All right, we got some cream from Recharge. Kyoto
Botanicals.
Right. We got okay, Platinums, Sea Salt Dark Chocolate. I could be into that.
Mm-hmm.
Could be into that.
I would be very much into that.
But you got some pre-rolls, Not Gonna Fly, I think, in my parents' household. But Justice Joints, okay. What else we got? Oh, these snozzberries taste like snozzberries. That's exactly right. Snozzberry gummies.
What is that?
Wait, I thought you read this article. You edited this article.
Oh, yeah, no, I did. No, I didn't edit it.
Okay.
So our writer, Nina, selected these products. These are the products she liked. And our editor, Maureen, edited this. I shared it on social, so I know what's in there. Okay. But I have not tried the snoozeberries, which I know are for sleep. That's all I know.
Snoozeberries, man. Oh, no, it's snoozeberries. My bad. I like snoozeberries.
Like snooze.
What else we got? I think that's
Dog Walker pre-rolls.
Dog Walker pre-rolls. All right. Oh, from Green Thumb. Long and strong, man. Yeah. Long and strong. You know what I gotta start doing? I gotta start consuming products of companies whose stock I own. Because whenever I go to the dispensary, I'm always like, because I'm not like, so I'm not the consumer that Nicole is trying to reach, right? Because I'm not like a super knowledgeable consumer. I go there and I tell them what I'm looking for, and I trust the bud tender to hook me up. I got to start buying products of companies that I'm actually invested in, like Green Thumb, like Cresco, Curaleaf, and TrueLeaf. But okay, cannabis Father's Day ideas, BenzingaCannabis.com.
Benzinga.com/cannabis.
Benzinga.com/cannabis. Thank you, Javier.
There you go. Yeah. What else we have? Tilt Holdings will bring Old Pal products to Massachusetts. Old Pal is an amazing brand. Cool stuff. Just like affordable cannabis, shareable cannabis. Comes in a bag like if it was like rolling tobacco. Interesting stuff. Some M&A acquired sales to buy Savage Enterprises for $44 million and is looking to enter the California market via the purchase of Premier Greens and MKRC Holdings. Then in Uruguay, the cannabis operator NetCan announced a partnership with Mega Labs, one of Latin America's leading pharmaceutical companies, to distribute cannabis or medical cannabis products under the NetCan brand in 27 countries in Latin America, potentially as it becomes legal. And we have two big races. CBD producer Brains Bioceutical raised $31.9 million via an investment round led by DSM Venturing, and another CBD company, Trait Biosciences, completed a 31 million Canadian Series A round led by Be Tomorrow Ventures.
All right, I have a question about the Latin American market, Javier. Can you explain compared to the U.S. how bifurcated, how divided is it? Because you know how in the U.S. we have like every state is basically its own market. It's exactly the same.
And actually, let's bring up our next guest. I mean, Luis Merchan. He is the CEO of Flora Growth. This is a company that operates in Colombia, South America. It's Colombia is the leader in terms of medical cannabis production in South America. And Flora Growth trades on the NASDAQ under the ticker FLGC. Again, FLGC. Do we have Luis to bring on?
We do not have Luis yet.
Oh, we don't have him. Okay.
That was a perfect segue, but we didn't stick the landing, Javi. We did not stick the landing. But no, but let's go back to my question, though, because you're saying South America, Latin America, exactly the same as the U.S. in terms of there. You have every country is basically its own independent market. Do you have any brands that are like in multiple that are dominant across the board or not really?
Not at the time, right? So each country has its own laws, of course, as you might expect. Most markets are not really developed. There's all the markets in Latin America are medical except for Uruguay. Uruguay was the first country to legalize adult use cannabis, even before Canada. But the system was never thought as a system that, or at least at first, that was seeking to drive business. It was just about people not going to jail for cannabis.
Right.
Of course, the industry has developed, but it's a 3 million people country, which means it's like there's not a massive local market. But they also don't have, like, the brands that can't really go out and expand into other countries just yet because they really have don't have a lot to sell. Medical is slowly taking, you know, it's slowly taking off. We've seen very important moves in Colombia since 2017. We have a system in Mexico, a system in Peru, system in Argentina, Chile too. But yeah, it's a mixed market.
All right, before we get our guests here, but before we bring them on, I want to answer Seth Painter's question in chat. Why did Gurn jump 20% after hours on no catalyst? Well, there is a catalyst, Seth. It's in Benzinga Pro, my man. Gurn, let me zoom in for you. Gurn published some data in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, some phase 2 data, and that must have been, and here's the release that they came out with talking about what the data says, that it was good. And let's go to the chart. All right, there we go.
Gurn. That was good.
Well, look, the chart speaks for itself, right? Stock's up 22%.
Yeah, the chart peaks for itself.
Exactly right. All right. Now, Javier, can you please, for the second time, do your amazing segue into our next guest who is here?
Let's do it. Let's bring on Luis Merchan, CEO of Flora Growth. Colombia, a company operating in Colombia. I believe they just moved to Miami, their headquarters. Luis, how are you?
Good, Javier. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Where are you joining us from today?
I'm in New York City, but as you mentioned, I just got back from Miami as we were scouting our future headquarters. We're likely gonna move over the next couple of weeks to Miami. Wow. We're very excited about that.
That's exciting.
Fun city for sure. I love Miami, man. My US ranking in terms of favorite cities goes Detroit number one, number two Miami, number three I believe Chicago. It's there with New York.
Wow, Detroit. That's interesting.
Well, that's where we are. That's where we are, Luis.
Okay, got it.
Represent.
He's the only person. He's the only person in the world that ranks Detroit as its favorite city. The only person outside America that
it's fun, man. It's got grit and moxie, and if you know what you're doing. There's always stuff going on. I mean, you know, when there's no pandemic, right? Off court.
Exactly.
Well, next time I go to Detroit, I'll make sure that you're the one that is hosting me and taking me around to the cool places to see then.
Of course.
Perfect. All right. Let's start with this. Luis, tell us about, tell us about the state of the business right now and tell us about Floor Growth.
Well, once again, thank you to both of you for having me join the show. We obviously follow it religiously and are very excited to be a part of it today. Our company is called Flora Growth. I'm the president and CEO of the company. It was founded in 2019, and we have moved very quickly from a project to tremendous execution. We are the first all-outdoor cannabis cultivation company to list on NASDAQ. We accomplished that on May 11th, which was a significant milestone for that. And we are an all-outdoor cultivation out of Colombia. 95% of our operations are in Colombia, including our cultivation and extraction facility, as well as a proprietary laboratory that manufactures a number of products. But we have a tremendous strategy. One of them is the cultivation of wholesale cannabis at the lowest production cost in the world. We have been able to achieve a cost structure of about 6 cents per gram of dry flower. But the other one, and equally important, is the foundation of a brand portfolio of products that have been resonating with consumers today, not only in the United States, but worldwide.
How exactly have you gotten production costs so low?
Well, there's a number of factors. I mean, as you probably know, the early days in the cannabis industry where all cannabis was cultivated in North America, the majority of the cultivation was an indoor cultivation, and attached with that indoor cultivation are significant operational costs. Colombia is located alongside the equator, and our farm specifically is located 1,500 meters above sea level. And for that reason alone, and a number of other environmental conditions, we have the optimal growing conditions for cannabis, which is a specialty cut flower. A lot of people don't know that cannabis is a specialty cut flower and that Colombia is the number one producer of flowers in the world and the number two exporter of flowers. And all this know-how and the optimal conditions have allowed us to develop that infrastructure. But the other reason that we have been able to do so is the favorable economic conditions of Colombia. The agricultural skilled labor is about 9 times more cost effective than that of the United States. And the production costs in the farm are exceptionally low in terms of our utilities, our water, and other resources that we need to grow the cannabis plant.
Can you say again, where is it that you grow? And I'm curious about that because you mentioned you grow at 6 cents a gram. And that's the lowest in the industry, possibly. So one, where are you growing? And two, are you comparing even to other Colombian companies? I mean, I know you can't compare to all the companies, but at least the public ones that were you know, they disclose their costs.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a number of ways in which I can answer that question. So first of all, we compare to the entire industry. You're absolutely right. But there's a number of smaller companies in Colombia that do what we do. Like the landscape in Colombia looks like somewhere like this. There's about 700 licenses that have been given. Of those 700 licenses, about 50 or so are in operation. And only a handful of them are actually pursuing the standards and certifications that they need to become a global player in the cannabis industry.
Yeah, less than 10.
That's correct. So the closest one to us is about 15 cents per gram of dry flower. So we're still 60% lower than the closest competitor that we have out there today. And those that are currently not public or are not disclosing that information because it's not readily available, they do not manufacture at the scale that we can scale. We have about 100 hectares today, but the opportunity to scale 21 times larger than that, or they don't have the certifications or licenses that will be required to export into the global marketplace.
And yeah, You go, Spencer.
No, actually, here's a question that we have from the chat from Seth Painter, who's asking about Dr. Annabelle Morgan. What role will she have at the company?
Dr. Annabelle has a tremendous background. We announced her today as a scientific advisor to our company. She has a tremendous background that I will not do her tremendous justice, but a double PhD from Vanderbilt has led many scientific efforts towards the utilization of the molecules that are found in cannabis. And she has a personal story in which she developed a specific formula to cure her third son from a very significant disease that he had in his brain. So she's coming in as a scientific advisor to help us, first of all, collect scientific evidence that could help us determine the many uses that already cannabis users today know that they can be found, but documenting them will help legitimize and, of course, help put those claims into the products and the pharmaceutical components that we're going to develop in the future, but also help guide the way in which we develop our products and the way we reach our consumers and our markets worldwide.
You guys recently announced the acquisition of HiMat, right?
Is that, you know, we were just discussing how to pronounce that because it's a Swiss name. Is it HiMat or?
Yes. You have it completely right, Javier.
Okay. Nailed it. There you go.
Nailed it on the first try. Can you speak a little bit into the strategy of that acquisition? Why you bought HiMat and what purpose it'll serve?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, our two foundational priorities are the manufacturing of organic wholesale cannabis at the lowest production cost in the world, and number two, to develop a portfolio of products that resonate with consumers worldwide. Our M&A strategy is attached to both of those foundational priorities. Early this month, we announced Hoshi, which is a company that is focusing on distribution of wholesale cannabis into Europe with assets in both Portugal and Malta. And that complements a portion of the supply chain that we needed to unlock for the wholesale portion of our business. The HiMat acquisition is aimed at supporting the brand portfolio of products. HiMat developed one of the first, if not the first, hemp cigarette, pre-roll cigarette. They have proprietary patented technology to manufacture pre-rolls at a higher rate. And they have been operating for a number of years and have significant revenues that are going to complement our revenues for this year. We're going to be able to take that know-how alongside with the leadership team, which is phenomenal, led by Roger Koch. And we're going to be able to expand that infrastructure, that portfolio of products into the balance of the world, while we're also complement our portfolio with the distribution that they currently have in Switzerland.
Definitely. And so you mentioned they have like 2,500 distribution points or so. How do you leverage that? Like, what can you sell? Are you planning to expand their line or is it just, you know, are you focusing on continuing to sell the cigarettes for now?
Well, you're reading my mind. We're not going to stay idle in terms of the portfolio of products. The HiMat team has a robust portfolio of products, including teas, skincare, and other very interesting product categories that they believe will resonate with not only the Switzerland consumer, but consumers worldwide. But we also have a portfolio of products, including juices, beverages, chocolates, and skincare products that we can add into the distribution network that is currently in existence for HiMat. So it's very complementary, as you can see, the acquisition of this company.
Here's a good question from the American one in the chat. How do you manage pests? Pest management.
How do we manage pests? You mean in the wholesale cultivation?
Yes.
Yeah, in cultivation.
So yes, of course, we utilize a number of techniques. All of them organic. We do not utilize any pesticides. So there's a very robust list of fertilizers that you can utilize to manage pests. And my agricultural team ensures that all of them follow organic practices because our company grows at our organic rate. But the advantages of cultivating in Colombia and in which we are, I mentioned the altitude at 1,500 meters, which reduced the humidity level, which reduced the incidence of pathogens. But we also have optimal weather conditions, like consistent 3 miles per hour winds and over 350 days of sunlight, the appropriate amount of precipitation in terms of water precipitation, and that allows us to reduce the incidence of pathogens and pests in our cultivations.
I'm so glad you could answer that, because many times when you put a CEO on the spot, they go like, I really don't know. I mean, and you're not obliged to know. That's why you hire people who are experts in this. But I'm glad we didn't just like throw you under the bus there. Like, hey,
no, of course not. Figure this out. I think it's our responsibility as CEOs, and this is something that we have been discussing in the industry. The industry has gone through an evolution, not only from the way we raise and deploy capital, but also the profile of the CEOs that are running companies today. You have to be able to get into the details of the business, not only in terms of agriculture and brand development, but you also have to make sure that you focus on the fundamentals of a company that should deliver long-term value for investors. And knowing these types of details is an important part of the business.
Now, you know, thank you, the American one, for the question. Now you have the question from the Argentine one or the American Juan. I was trying to decide on that joke. I think both were pretty bad. So I'll just stay with Argentine one. You know, you just switch gears. Spencer is like, dude, just end the show now. Let's switch gears. You were talking about investor returns, and you're listed on NASDAQ. That's pretty cool. You're probably one of two or three cannabis companies in Latin America listed on NASDAQ. I can only think of one more.
And that's correct. We actually are the first cannabis company to go through a direct listing. Like, some of them have done reverse or app listing or SPACs, but we are the first company to do a direct listing. And that was a very thoughtful decision.
Why? I'm curious, why direct listing? So you guys chose not to.
Yeah, it's harder.
You guys chose not to raise any money.
We raised $50 million through our IPO, but we went direct, which means that yes, it's a very robust process. You have to comply mm-hmm. with a significant
no SPAC. That's what he means, like no SPAC, no reverse merger. You know, those kinds of things that we do in cannabis, because honestly, there's so many hurdles to listing that, you know, we find alternative ways. Going directly to the NASDAQ is a pain in the neck.
That's right. It's exceptionally hard, but it also shows the commitment that as a company and as a leadership team, we have to be responsible with every dollar that we raise in terms of capital for our investors, and that we're also going to be able to be incredibly transparent about how we deploy those dollars, and that we're also going to be able to provide long-term value to our investors. And I think being able to have accomplished this signals to the investor community and to the market that not only our company is ready, but also the market and the exchanges and the financial sector as a whole is getting readier for the cannabis industry to go mainstream. And that bodes well for the entire industry.
But just to be clear about the direct listing, so you did not issue any new shares. You didn't hire underwriters. You didn't do any. You didn't go through any of that, right?
Oh, no. We sure did. So I will clarify. Yes.
It was okay.
So we completed last year, we completed a $30 million pre-IPO equity raise through a Reg A process.
Right.
When we completed that, we were left with about 10,600 investors.
Okay.
And our analysis of geography left us with about 85% of them located in the United States, which immediately signaled to us that the investor community wanted us to do this. So, of course, we hire an underwriter. We completed all the requirements from FINRA, the SEC, NASDAQ, DTC, all the work that you need to complete, including the audited financial statements and the filing of all the forms necessary to list. And we also raised $16.6 million. Our initial goal was to raise on a target between 4 and 5. Our demand was significant enough that we raised at the top end of the range at $5.
Wow. Okay.
And we're able to complete the process. It was about a six-month process, but yes, absolutely, we completed all those steps.
I'm curious, how do you market a Reg A Plus so successfully? For viewers, when we're talking about Reg A Plus, we're not talking about music. This is a Regulation A Plus offering. It's a sort of crowdfunding enabled by the Jobs Act in America, which basically allows retail investors, regular people, to participate in pre-IPO funding rounds. You know, virtually democratizing access to capital formation and no longer, you know, limiting that to accredited investors and institutions. So that's very cool. I love Reg A Pluses. Some are great, some are a little bit scammy. Yours was clearly successful. How did you market it?
Well, there was no marketing. I mean, we make sure that we presented the project to our investors. We presented it to a number of newsletter writers and investors that wanted to learn about the project. And they believed in the project and published in their newsletters. And these types of communications are not like they're not considered marketing. Like there's no fees paid. We just made sure that we told the story, that we showed our leadership team, that we showed the vision that we had for the company, and those newsletters were able to support us, and in turn their readers and the investor community embraced the project. And that's why we were able to be so successful. By the second week of October, less than 10 months into our Reggae Plus, we were already oversubscribed with no marketing spend behind it.
Now, there's something I'm thinking about. We've been covering Flora growth since its inception on our Spanish language website, elplanteo.com. If you're not following and you speak Spanish, go follow El Planteo and elplanteo.com or in every social media outlet where on the internet. But you said 85% of your Reggae Plus investors were actually in the States. Why do you think that is? And why isn't, like, all we get are questions, you know, from Latin America, you know, like, dude, how do I invest in cannabis? How can I invest from Argentina? How can I invest from Mexico? Like, which stock should I buy? How can I invest in private companies? So why do you think there's, like, lacking interest, or what's happening, and how, what can we do? Like, of course, you know, go to El Planteo, but what else?
Yes, I think we need to give them access. I think you're absolutely right. The international community is interested in investing in cannabis. We need to make sure that we give them access to information. I think places like this one, like El Planteo, where you have the opportunity to showcase incredible projects that actually have the opportunity to deliver revenue growth, that are focusing on the fundamentals, that want to operate a solid company, we should be able to give the space to these companies so the investors then can invest, right? But there's also access to those investment vehicles. And for some countries, more than others, it can become a little bit more complex in terms of regulations and access. From my standpoint, we're just working on making sure that investors from all over the world, starting with Colombia, because Colombia is where we have the operations, have access to our company shares, either to a dual listing or other mechanisms that we may be able to provide in the near future.
All right, just last one here, Luis, before we let you go. Why move to Miami?
Well, there's a tremendous number of benefits for Miami. Last year, we started evaluating where our United States headquarters would be. Of course, I'm located in New York City today, so I was biased towards New York City. But the analysis, of course, highlights that all the benefits, the best metropolitan area for growth in cannabis right now is Miami. The port of Miami is exceptionally busy. It's a bridge between Latin America and North America, but also for trade all over the world. Our logistics infrastructure is based out of Miami. There's a tremendous access to diverse talent in the Miami and the Florida area, and it's a place that people with diverse talent are actually looking forward to move to. And then, of course, the corporate tax rate is highly beneficial. And for all those reasons, we decided to.
I was going to ask you about that. My accountant, I'm from New York, like, originally, and that's where I have to pay taxes. And my accountant is like, dude, just relocate to Florida. You don't even live there. You don't even live in New York. You don't need your New York address.
Yes.
Just move somewhere else. But, you know, so taxes clearly play an important part in maximizing shareholder returns, right?
That's correct. Yes. We wanted to make sure that we made the right decision for from a talent perspective, from an investor value perspective, and also from a logistics and operational perspective. And Miami checked all the boxes for us.
All right, Luis Marchand is the CEO of Flora Growth. Ticker up on the screen, FLGC. Luis, thank you so much. We look forward to keeping in touch and tracking your progress, tracking the move, and seeing how things shake out.
Same here, guys. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.
All right, Javi, we made it, man.
Yeah, we made it.
5 o'clock, if you can believe it. Time flies when you're having fun.
This is a fun show, right? Even without the Lane Brothers.
Even without
the Lane Brothers,
you don't need those. Oh, I see what you did there. That's clever. That was clever. We're not going to tell them that we said that, but don't even need those guys. You got Javier Haas. You got me, guys. give us a like. All right, hit that like button. Let's see if we can get more likes on this show than we would on any normal show. But it is 5 o'clock. Javi, do we have any final thoughts before we get off here and let Ryan Royce be on and do his thing next?
I think that's about it. Just follow us. Go to benzinga.com/cannabis every day. A big shout out to Mets Brands, who got accepted into Al Harrington's Viola's business incubator. This is the second brand to make it in there. And just follow us, BZ Cannabis, Javier Hase on social media, SJ Israel on Twitter, I believe, and also Instagram.
That's it right there. Thanks to Nicole Wolf. Thanks to Luis Marchand. Thanks to Javier Hase for bearing with me for the last hour. Thank you for watching. After Hours with Ryan Royce Biani starts right now. The stream is going to redirect straight to that, so you don't have to do anything. Javi,
have adios. A good day,
man. See you.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery. Jeep Freedom Days are here, where right now, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2022 Grand Cherokee WK Laredo E4x4 for $369 a month for 36 months with $3,799 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease through Chrysler Capital. Lessee is responsible for termination fees. Current lease must end by 7/3/23. Extra charge for miles over 30,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 7/5/22. Jeep is a registered trademark.